My name is Bob Kohler. She looked tall and ordinary in t-shirt and blue jeans. I spotted her as I turned the corner from Glenwood onto Pratt on my way home from the train station on a hot afternoon. A young woman, late 20s maybe, just standing there, fidgety, tense, smiling the false smile of someone who wants something from you. Yeah, I know that look, or thought I did. I see it on half the street corners downtown, a pseudo-friendliness that surges out of the gloom and desperation as I walk past. Spare some change? I assumed she was another panhandler. Sometimes I give in, reach into my pocket, even my wallet, but mostly, no. I walk past with averted eyes, letting the false smile and the real need behind it dangle in midair. And doing so disturbs me every time. Feels like the violation of a code. Give eye contact. Listen to people. Be generous of spirit. Judge not, lest ye be judged. When I saw her, I felt a weary give in my heart, a surrender to familiar numbness. She approached me with nervous determination, but I didn't understand her intent. I thought, here's one more person with urgent troubles that I want no part of, and dampened my senses, prepared not to acknowledge her. Numbness is a political statement. I abstain. Come on, I'm just a private soul, lost in my own life. I can't be your salvation. The need, right here in my own neighborhood, as in need a meal, need a place to stay tonight, is overwhelming. I feel cornered by one broken life after another, alone in the moment with each one, jealously protective of the silver in my pocket. Sorry, not this time. This is not my responsibility. She didn't say anything as I breezed past her. Instead, she fell into stride next to me, maintaining that little soft, embarrassed, aren't we friends smile. We walk a few steps, then, where are you headed? Silence. But I look at her. I mean my look to convey skeptical neutrality. Yes? What is it? This is delicate. I can no longer pretend she isn't there. Not when she has attached herself to my journey. But to acknowledge her at all is to confer a legitimacy on our sudden chummy intimacy. Her presence fills me with alarm, anger, and at the pit of my maleness, a dangerous curiosity. I'm beginning to catch on. My glare is harsh, but it's a bluff. I am no longer numb. Do you live around here? Her voice is upbeat and perky, as though a real conversation is in progress. She has freckles, and being taller than I am, walks with a slight stoop, so her hopeful eyes can probe my face. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. I'm unable not to respond. Yeah, not far. We walk in silence for a few more paces, and there can be no doubt what this is all about. But even so, I am surprised, finally, when she blurts it out. Would you like some company? This is the thing. The proposition wasn't, you know, coarse. Lacquered in cheap endearments, hey honey, hey big guy, what you might call professional. It seemed instead appallingly amateurish, the words fighting their way out through an obstacle course of shame. Her eyes were scared, almost cringing. "Would you like some company? I can't get the words out of my head. The full horror of them in the age of AIDS." I felt some awful internal mechanism lurch into motion, curiosity mutating into desire, as I grasped the power I wielded. The idea of purchasing for an hour, half an hour, 15 minutes, another human being, a woman, caused all thought to stop. I trembled as I looked at her, as we stood at the terrible junction of sex and need. "No, thank you," I said. She said she hadn't eaten all day. I wanted to touch her, confer a blessing, make everything all right. Instead, oh Lord, I gave her a dollar from the pity fund.